Mini episode 105 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by the Pullins Group, delivering public affairs consulting and marketing services for small businesses trying to grow. Follow them on the web at PullinsGroup.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
All right, Kyle, we have reached the finish line here, or at least at the end of this one, part nine of the Kyle Ross History of WrestleMania anthology here in the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris caddying for Kyle Ross here.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, knowing the way that we've been going with all these, the finish line is still a while away.
And that's the beauty of it. Yes. We don't exactly know at the moment here. We go where the spirit takes us.
No one gives you more in these, okay? I will put this series, okay, it's the Flair Steamboat of wrestling podcasts, I believe. I will put these against any wrestling podcasts anywhere. Thank you very much.
I mean, this is going to be well over 10 hours. I don't know exactly how many by the time we're done, but it's at least that much. Yeah. So, yeah, nobody delivers for the peeps like we do. We talked about in the last
the
one
FDH
here.
Lounge where the big boys play.
Yeah, yes. we talked
this
about
is not
it.
The World Whining Federation.
It is not, nor the World Entrance Federation, yes. As used to be the case back on SNS back in the day, as that used to be joked about. But we talked about in the last one here, and this is what sets up for the modern era. We're covering the modern era here, you know, WrestleMania 22 to the present. And again, we're going to go over these a lot quicker than we did the previous ones because, hey, I would hope most of you out there actually know what happened in the modern era.
Yeah, and as the time goes by, you might still learn something about some of these shows.
Right.
Especially more, you know, the book isn't closed on some of these.
Yes.
And I mean, even if you watch something like the documentary, people are like, wow, I can't believe you're, you know, painting the last, you know, six with one broad stroke. Well, like, look at the WrestleMania DVD.
Right.
You know, I mean, once you get to the end, it's kind of like, you just watch, it's fresh in your mind.
Right. You know, and in this modern era, and we talked about it toward the end of the previous one, we were talking about WrestleMania 21, which was the launch in some ways for this year. And something we've talked about a lot is the class of 02. Essentially, the guys that came up from Ohio Valley Wrestling, Brock Lesnar was shot to the main event, was already gone by this point in time. But you got Randy Orton, who had a match against The Undertaker, his first big high-profile singles match in there. And then you had some other guys that came out of Ohio Valley Wrestling in 2002. You had a guy, Kyle Ross, who was known as Leviathan. But you know him as Batista. I'll explain in a second why we're laughing. And you had another guy known as the Prototype. You know him as John Cena.
You don't say.
Yeah, which, what we're doing, by the way, and I can only hope that this guy stumbles across this mini episode, some tool shed at an ROH show.
I don't know what it's from. If somebody is listening to this and was with me.
This is a guy who knows Belfie. I'll have to ask Belfie this, because this is a guy who he knows, and you won't be surprised, as speaks disparagingly of. I know this covers a lot of people that Belfie's dealt with, but yeah, Belfie speaks disparagingly of this fellow. I'll have to ask him for his name, but this is a guy who at one point in time had some early connections to the Pro Wrestling Insider show that Belfie does.
And I don't know if it was a Ring of Honor show or what, but I just remember running into this knob, and he knew what we did.
And he was like lording over his OVW trivia on you.
And he thought he was so
it's
smart.
It's not even trivia, actually.
He
any
thought
smart
he was
fan knows
so
that.
Smart because he knew Cena and Batista's name in OVW, and he said it like he was so cool. He's like, you know, I remember in OVW watching a guy by the name of Leviathan. You know him as Batista. And he's like, there was another guy, too, that I really liked. His name was Prototype. You know him as John Cena. I was like, who is this knob? I'm glad you reminded me about that. I have no idea who this man was. I can't remember if it was a Ring of Honor show with. I can't remember who I was with.
I think it was ROH. I'll have to ask Belfie.
I just remember.
I'm thinking that the guy's name is Kevin for some reason.
Okay, all I know is I hope there was an old episode of SNS where we trolled the hell out of this guy. I just don't know.
Well, we're trolling him now, even if you didn't then.
You know him as Batista.
What better setup could there be for talking about the modern era as we start to get into these guys? And again, we're gonna hit these all, you know, in much more rapid succession.
Just hitting the top matches,
well,
really.
Exactly. And we don't even have to do a macro because I feel like we can just refer you back to the end of Chapter 8 of this thing here. When we're talking about WrestleMania 21, that really kicked off the modern era. You lumped it in with 19 and 20 because you felt like it was the best three-year run, and that was the theme of that particular mini-episode that we did. But here in Part 9, it's taking it the rest of the way up to the present, and like you said, there are so many commonalities. There's not much different. They're working off the same template every year, for better and for worse. That's why there's only a couple things every year worth talking about presently in the historical record.
Yeah, and with WrestleMania 22, I think there's two things worth pointing out. One, it's the last non-stadium WrestleMania.
Which one?
22. All the other ones have been big stadiums.
You're right.
Ford Field, Orange Bowl, Houston. Where was 26 at? Arizona.
Yeah.
Last year was, how embarrassing is that?
You know what was weird?
Where was last year's WrestleMania?
Last year was in Atlanta.
Okay.
That's how forgettable
right.
It was.
Okay.
But it was a thing where what they did, and they've done this a couple times in WrestleMania history, because you're talking about what came before the run of the Dome shows, doing the loop, if you will, New York, Chicago, L.A. In this case, it was New York, L.A., Chicago. Chicago was 22. They've always liked these markets here. Quite frankly,
well, I don't know if you know your United States, and I know you do, being the politician that you are. But,
yes.
You know, those are the three largest cities in the country.
Oh, exactly.
Did you know that?
Exactly. Rumor has it anyways.
The Windy City.
Yes.
You know it is Chicago.
I look forward to all the ways we can incorporate that as we go along.
I'm going to beat this joke into the ground about 10 minutes in.
Here's what I'm wondering about, because, again, a long time ago they talked about doing, and if they do it now, it wouldn't be the L.A. Memorial Coliseum because it's a rat hole. But this may mean maybe we have a Rose Bowl to look forward to in the future. What I'm wondering
Cowboys Stadium is the one big one out there.
Yeah, but what I'm wondering is they're doing it at New Meadowlands next year. Could that mean, would they have the bizzalls to do a Soldier Field show, do one right up on the lake in early April?
No.
You don't think so?
It'd be real cold. It could snow.
It could. It very well could, yeah.
No, I don't think they, no.
Okay. All right, just wondering.
Chicago's a great wrestling town. It's a town that has continuously through this entire year shown that it hates John Cena.
Yeah.
And that's where I want to start with WrestleMania 22.
Yeah.
This is a very average WrestleMania. I think this was a clear step down from the previous three.
Yes.
It was one that was obviously covered in great detail in the SNS days. And what's interesting is I think it's become more historically irrelevant in that what I always remembered with this show, you know, in the years after was Cena getting the hell boot out of him against Triple H, you know, mm-hmm. longtime heel Triple H. And at the time, I remember everyone was in panic mode. I mean, I remember myself. I probably went on the air and said, oh, my God, you've got to turn this guy heel tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is terrible. You just said the number one babyface of the company. You put over boot out of the frickin' building. But considering that happens every time he goes to Chicago, considering that it happens, you know, relatively, you know, regularly.
Right.
To me, it's, I mean, it was pretty vicious at this time, and it was new. There were signs. We talked about at the end of our last podcast, the switch of Cena and Batista, them switching brands, and how it really didn't work out the way they, as well as I think it was intended. You know, Batista gets injured right away, too. He's not even on this card. That's another thing that, you know, Batista, you know,
we'll talk
you may
about
him
that
know
as
Leviathan. Some people may know him better as Leviathan.
Yes.
But, you know, for WrestleMania 22, we just know him as injured, which is certainly something a lot of people
we
know
him as that a few times in the years to come.
But this is just like just a very a forgettable WrestleMania. I mean, when you look at it, Cena going over Triple H certainly did not have it just didn't, there was no real program to
it. This is almost devoid of historical importance.
Yeah, I think there were some rumors that they wanted to do Hogan Austin at this one. Remember, and that fell through. And this was a show that really could have used a blast from the past match.
Although there was talk that even at the Hall of Fame inductions that weekend, that it could be like the start of a setup for the next year in the Dome in Detroit. So it could have been this year, it could have been the next year.
But, yeah, this was just a kind of a forget. I mean, it's not – nothing really stinks on this one.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot to say about John Cena, Triple H, to be honest with you. The program was very forgettable. Triple H lost the Rumble. but still challenged. Anyway, they did that again. And I remember being surprised that Cena won.
Well,
at the time.
Yeah, because they seemed to be pointing the other way. But it was a thing where I got 2 points to make about that. The first is, I'm going to go back to what you've said previously in other contexts here, in previous segments that we've done. People cheering the booking. Isn't it, quite frankly, a matter of that with Triple H, that he'd been booked as a dominant heel for so long? It was just a matter. He was getting booked so much stronger than Cena. Cena's doing everything but going out there and calling him Mr. Helmsley. I mean, they were cheering the booking.
I don't know if they were cheering the booking or booing the booking.
Well,
I think it was,
like, why they were getting behind Triple H. Because his booking was so much stronger. They were behind him.
I think if I would have worked against Cena that night, I would have got some cheers.
I think you're right.
You know, I think it was more of an anti. Right. It's usually more, and to Cena's credit, you know, by God, you love him or you hate him, everyone's got an opinion, that it's usually in a lot of Cena matches, and there are some guys where people are genuinely cheering for the opponent, but a lot of times it's people just booing Cena.
Yeah, that's true.
And there was definitely some cheers to Triple H, but I think it was more along the lines of the crowd just saying a significant portion of the crowd, a crowd that would listen to a podcast like this, the so-called smart marks, just pooping on Cena, not wanting him.
Well, the other thing here, too, and I feel like what we're doing with this first one here is setting up the themes that we probably don't have to touch as much on in the ones going forward here. But one of them is, again, in terms of John Cena and the reaction to him over the years by the crowd, and the fact that we were still at the point in time, eventually as you went along, you knew, okay, the Office isn't changing their approach no matter what. But it was still at this point in time not to be thought of as naive for thinking that they were going to give in and just turn him heel.
Oh, yeah. And
essentially the crowd did. I mean, I'll never forget the post show for SNS, which I stuck around for that night, and making the joke with you
guys.
Glad
someone remembers it. I think I was kind of hammered by that point.
You may remember me saying this, you may not. But I made the joke early on and said, those cameras afterwards, and this was not so much a joke as an observation, it was just it was unbelievable they tried to do this. They managed to find the isolated people, no more than 100 in a crowd of 13,000 plus that were happy about this.
Yeah.
With a Hulk Hogan victory at WrestleMania, love him or hate him, and you know where we fall on that spectrum, mm-hmm. You could have panned anywhere in the crowd and seen people happy while he was in there doing his routine versus that night. It was the master of all selective editing. Let's get close zoom-ups on people who are celebrating because they are the exception to the rule.
Look, let me kind of do a little foreshadowing here.
Yeah.
It's interesting that everything we're talking about is coming to a head this year at WrestleMania. By the way, we will be going over this year's WrestleMania card at the end of this podcast, kids.
Yep.
All right, listen to it. That the stubbornness of this promotion, it's an unprecedented stubbornness with a performer.
Right.
There is no other promotion with no other wrestler that has ever been this stubborn not to turn a guy. I mean, if you look through the history of this business, any babyface who's getting consistently booed or any heel that's being consistently cheered is turned typically, unless if it's like an isolated event in a random crowd. I mean, you have things, I mean, I'm going way back here, Rick, you'll like this reference. You have the Freebirds Dynamic Dudes at Halloween Havoc 89,
right.
But that was face-hating Philly in its heyday, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, for there to be such a long and consistent and sustained period of a top, not just a babyface, but your top babyface being booed, and we're still talking, and again, this is why we're lumping all these together.
Right.
You know, this is WrestleMania 22, we're coming on WrestleMania 28, still talking about the same things.
Sure. And the way that it goes, too, with John Cena, to me, and you and I are, I mean, the entire point of doing something like we've been doing in these nine parts here is that, you know, you and I are people that enjoy looking at history and kind of placing it in certain contexts. That is one of the first bullets that goes on his professional epitaph when he's done. When you think of John Cena, the two or three things you think of, one of them has to be that it's almost unprecedented in the course of the industry that I can think of nobody else that was immune to what the crowd wanted them to be. For John Cena, it was all about what the Office wanted him to be because he sells merch, and he sells merch to kiddies, period.
And he's very popular, and I'm not saying that he should be curtain jerking or anything, but I mean, it's unique. as they might say.
It was. It was. Now, this was the title match that closed the show. Like I said, we're not going to hit all the things here that happened, but the other world title match for the World Heavyweight
this
Championship.
This should be touched upon.
Triple threat in only 9:18.
Again, one of the title matches inferior to the other.
Yeah, and boy, I'd love to line these up and take a look at them. Was there ever a non-Hulk Hogan world title match at WrestleMania shorter than this one? Rey Mysterio defeated Randy Orton and Kurt Angle to win the championship. They had done the very distasteful Randy Orton, Eddie's in Hell thing, setting this up. This was basically the Eddie Guerrero death exploitation angle here.
All right, you and I have talked about this before. I think that's strong. I remember I defended
this. I stand by it.
Some of the things they did, the Orton comments, which, by the way, I'm sure he didn't come up with. Okay,
right.
I think that was a little, you know, ooh, you know, maybe you want to say this, Randy.
I know. I don't blame him personally.
Okay, but no, here's the thing. Maybe, again, it's my expectations for this industry. The concept that in the wake of Eddie Guerrero's death, it would call it exploited, call it what you will, Rey Mysterio winning the title, I have nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Look at the
doesn't
NFL.
Rey Mysterio have a great enough story independent of Eddie Guerrero to merit this?
I didn't give him a little nudge he needed. I do not. It's funny. I always talk about another pointless part of another thing that I don't like about the two champions is basically everyone who's held the title mm-hmm. would have gotten a run had there only been one title anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It would have just been more meaningful.
Right.
If I was to pick a couple guys that wouldn't have, JBL would have certainly be on that list. I think Rey Mysterio is also on that list.
Yeah.
He only got this run because of it. And you could say that, hey, well, he is real talented, and if he wasn't booked properly anyway, but he wasn't booked but the Eddie stuff wasn't what did him harm or made me look at him negatively. It was that he was just booked like a loser. To be honest,
well,
in this whole period.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing where people hold wrestling to a standard that's too high. Look at the NFL. Somebody passes away. I remember a couple years ago there was a coach for the Bengals.
Mike Zimmer, the defensive coordinator's wife, passed away.
All over. Oh, what a great win that was for the Bengals. They did it for Mike Zimmer.
Al Davis this past year.
Al
the
Davis.
Win one for Al.
Brett Favre's dad passes away. He still plays. John Mann's fawning over him. People do this. It's very natural. Now, I didn't like some of the... I think it was people not being intellectually honest with themselves, saying, oh, I don't want Ray to win this way. It's like, well, to me, it's like, man, he ain't going to win it any other way.
Well,
He wasn't.
The other thing I'll say, too, wrestling has a very warped sense
yes,
of the participants that are in. I will not rule out that if somebody were to tell Eddie Guerrero, you're going to pass away on this date or whatever, and oh, by the way, at the next WrestleMania, we're going to do this and you're going to be a big part of the storyline, Eddie would have been like, that's great. If I can't be there, I find that warped, but I will not rule out that Eddie would have been like, you know what, if I can't be there, then I'll still feel like I'm a part of it. I'll be watching from another place. Let me be a part. You know, in other words, that Eddie himself would have blessed it. I cannot rule that out. I find it warped that anybody would bless that. But I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt in this industry. Participants have a sense of that Eddie might have regarded it as a sense of immortality. I'm not physically there, but I'm a part of the storyline.
I don't think this cheapened. I kind of agree
you seem
with where
confused,
you're going there.
You seem confused by my point.
At first, I didn't know where you were going.
Okay.
But I don't think this cheapened the memory of it.
Do you think Eddie would have approved? I mean, I don't know one way or another.
I don't know. Here's what I'm saying, though.
Okay.
I think it would be more distasteful for them to just completely, like, just drive over it like it's a speed bump and never mention it again.
I would agree with that.
I always said that. And there were people who got really offended by them talking about it, and I think those people are dumb.
I would agree with that. As this is a good bridge to the next one we're going to talk about. We'll talk about this one briefly, but as much as I don't like the PG era, at least we're not hearing Eddie is dead, and at least there are no Vince McMahon matches that involve God as a tag team partner. That would come the month after this one. Shawn Michaels defeated Vince McMahon. This was the beginning of the seeds of DX reuniting. Both Shawn Michaels in his match and Triple H gave crotch chops in their matches there. And it was just your typical.
This was your usual McMahon throwaway,
brawl.
But at least it was not a main drawing card.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying?
It wasn't.
This was It was fine.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Undertaker, his most forgettable match of the last dozen years at WrestleMania against Mark Henry in a casket match before Mark Henry was awesome in the last year. Nothing else really worth much talking about aside from Edge
and Foley.
That's what I was going to say.
I think it's the best match on this card. I think it's a fringe top 25 WrestleMania match.
And
obviously memorable for the big spot at the end with the spear through the flaming table.
And if we're gonna grasp, and God knows you got to grasp on this card, for anything of historical significance, this as the continuing of Edge's elevation up the card. It was consensus by this point in time he deserved to hold on to the title longer than he did when he won it from Cena with the Money in the Bank earlier in the year. The ratings popped. Business popped when he had it. This match here as a consolation prize for him and the effectiveness of him in the hardcore format against Mick Foley, that looks to me like the only historical significance on the whole friggin' card.
Yeah, I remember me and your old friend Jake Digman kind of lamenting at the time, oh, it would be great to do streak versus streak at this point,
yes.
Edge versus Undertaker, because Edge deserves something, rather than just kind of be a speed bump champion. But you know what? This actually probably was better for Edge to do because he would have jobbed to the Undertaker, and it would have just made it worse. So.
Well, and he wasn't ready for the Undertaker yet. He needed to still be built more. The only other thing I'll mention, just because I didn't get a chance to mention it previously when I saw him on WrestleMania lineups or Billiard and Chuck or whatever, but Goldust was in the Battle Royal that they had the dark match to start this show. And just apropos of nothing, I just like to say, just as proof that I would have been one of the most politically incorrect bookers of all time, I always thought that Goldust's finishing maneuver should have been the fruit roll-up. Wouldn't that have been a great one?
Oh, boy.
Wouldn't that have been great?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
You don't seem appreciative of that, Kyle Ross.
How about the mouth-to-mouth angle with Ahmed Johnson? I always enjoyed that.
That was outstanding. I loved it. The next year, WrestleMania 23, again, we talked about this, that there are certain template kind of things here. There's going to be a John Cena title match. This year, there would be a Batista title match. He was back in the picture. The Undertaker would be in a high-profile match. That would be against Batista. There would be a big event with a celebrity and or possibly a Vince McMahon match. We haven't seen a Vince McMahon match at WrestleMania since the Shawn Michaels one, but he factored into the celebrity angle this time. I think that's most of the main themes here.
Yeah, well, and there's one more. 20 years later, they returned to Detroit.
Yes,
after the big WrestleMania 3. This show clearly not as good.
No, not at all.
It was interesting because, again, they did this where they had some great built. You know, I'll give them this. This was one of the occasions where they legitimately had the two title matches I thought pretty even.
Yeah.
Now, Cena was obviously the star of the promotion, but The Undertaker was the hot challenger. He had won the Rumble for the first time ever. A very good Rumble, by the way.
Yeah.
Again, beating Shawn Michaels. But Michaels was kind of thrust into the world title picture when Triple H got hurt at the beginning of the year. And he drew Cena. I didn't really ever buy Michaels as having a chance to win. The match is good. It's right on the outskirts of the top 25 WrestleMania matches of all time. Both title matches here are. I think both, you got 2 4-star title matches here. But, you know, it's funny that there's always, of course, a story that Batista and Undertaker were real pissed that they didn't get to go on last year.
Yeah.
I think they probably should have because The Undertaker had won the Rumble. He was the hotter challenger. And it was the match that I thought had more intrigue. Cena-Michaels, I remember, just like didn't do it for me.
Right.
It was more that they put that on last to reaffirm that Cena was their guy. Again, stubbornness with Cena.
Yeah, politics.
So Undertaker does go over Batista to continue the streak.
I thought Batista would go over. I thought he would win, and I thought he should win. Now, this is hindsight's 20/20. I guess I was wrong about that because Batista's not around anymore. But
yeah, and kind of after this, the bloom was kind of off the proverbial Batista rose. Remember, he got hurt. He wasn't on WrestleMania. He comes back, beats Booker T.
Yeah.
And then I kind of always got the sense that it was time to move for Batista.
He was never the same on SmackDown.
And it was fine because at least by next year, Edge, who was the guy who needed to be the champ on SmackDown, got it anyway with doing the Money in the Bank gimmick again, beating Undertaker. But, you know, the match that drew the house on this involved Vince McMahon and Donald Trump.
It did. Now, let me just go back to the Cena match for just a second and say, and it was an excellent match. I said to you off air, I don't know the extent to which you agree or disagree, you had the existing program with Michaels, with Team Rated RKO. I would have made this a four-way match because I don't think you had enough intrigue. I agree with you on Cena versus Michaels. They were the tag team champions at that point. Oh, yeah. Unlikely partners, blah, blah, blah.
I like Team RKO, rated RKO.
Well, exactly. But, I mean, you know, I'm saying Cena and Michaels were the tag team champions by the time WrestleMania rolled around. But Yeah, they were. They won them off of Team RKO. That was how badly they buried Team RKO, who both ended up in the Money in the Bank ladder match. Do you agree with me? It would have been much more intrigue, the four of them in there, than just Cena and Michaels.
Yeah.
Playing off of the history.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. And what's funny is that they did do that the next pay-per-view Backlash, and it was a better match.
Yeah.
By the way, Batista and Undertaker also had a better match at that same pay-per-view.
Yeah, yeah. So sometimes,
that was a good pay-per-view. Backlash 07 was strong, I remember.
Yeah, it was. It really was. And that was.
And then Cena and Michaels even had a better match, the match in London, the 50-minute match on TV that Michaels wins non-title.
Backlash 07, we should mention this because we teased it before. Bad Blood 03 started the run of individual brand pay-per-views. Backlash 07 started the present run of where every pay-per-view was all brands at that point in time. Where ECW wasn't always on all of them. ECW having restarted in 06 under their banner. WWE ECW, if you will.
We're not going to talk about that.
Yeah. Well, the guy who was the ECW champion at the time, Bobby Lashley.
Oh, very nice segue there, Ricky.
Thank you. This is a thing where you're right that it drew a lot of money. Steve Austin was the special guest referee. Bobby Lashley with Donald Trump in his corner defeated Umaga with Vince McMahon and Armando Alejandro Estrada in his corner. Hair versus hair.
Who
for
by this point
McMahon.
Was not allowed to cut promos anymore because he was cut. Funny. You know, we're going to do it again. Just whatever. But, you know, John Cena, we don't want to, you know, it was so funny. Oh, my God, he's getting a positive reaction. We need to kill him.
Right.
And not let him talk.
And this strikes me as a thing where I can't remember too many times where they really drew off of a match in spite of themselves. Because as armchair booker, there was nothing I liked about the setup of this thing. It started from a goofy Donald Trump, Rosie O'Donnell skit on Raw. And then by the time it emerged to being a challenge between, Vince and Trump both got egos. I get that. You know, things are going to escalate between them. Vince goes for Umaga, who Cena had cleanly beaten on pay-per-view twice earlier in the year. I guess I could kind of get that as maybe the best available guy. You could have made a strong.
And they had a good match at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah,
Cena and Umaga. It was very good. There are people who love that match. I'm not going to go that far, but it was a good match.
Right, but I mean, I'm looking here at who else was available. I mean, King Booker, you know, Orton, Edge, whatever.
Well, a lot of those guys, though, were kind of like, yeah, you know, they've been there before. They wanted to go with two, and yes, you're right. Umaga had just lost to Cena, but, you know, he's still near the top of the card.
And we never heard why Donald Trump picked Lashley. Would it be asking too much to get one friggin' promo about, I've been scouting these guys, and this guy looks like the future of wrestling to me. Come on, Kyle. Come on.
You can't count on Donald Trump to do that.
To give a promo? He gives promos every week on his own show.
Yeah, but he knows what he's talking about there. Here's
the
problem.
He knows enough about pro wrestling.
No, he doesn't. Here's the problem.
He hosted two of them.
Well,
two WrestleManias.
Okay, yeah, so did, you know. A lot. I'm trying to think. I can't think of it. You caught me tongue-tied here. I don't know. I'm trying to think of someone else who hosts. I guess he's the only guy who, you know, kind of his name's on the marquee of the building. You know, and, well, then again, I don't think the Ford family, okay?
Right, that's more true.
With the Detroit Lions. But listen to this. This, to me, is your classic short-sighted, let's draw some money, let's draw some attention move.
Right. And I know they thought Lashley was going to be one of the next big things in the company.
And that wasn't their fault.
Right. No.
And Umaga should have lost to John Cena. Okay, now, you could question the timing if you're going to put him in a match like this.
I do
this,
question the timing.
But he did not deserve to go over John Cena.
Right.
Okay. And obviously, for reasons out of their control, he's definitely no longer. I mean, he's passed away, obviously.
Right.
Lashley just simply decided to call it quit, very Brock Lesnar-esque.
Right.
Decided he didn't want to do this anymore, so that's not their fault. But it's like, okay, yeah, this has become Donald Trump, the Donald Trump match, rather than the participants mattering.
Right.
Which is ultimately what this should be about. This should be about Trump and McMahon's involvement giving a rub to the performers.
Right.
It really didn't do that. So, yeah, while this drew a big number, it's like one of those things that people are like, oh, okay, we saw Donald Trump. Vince got his head shaved. See you next year at WrestleMania.
I'm going to give you a real funny postscript to this, especially with you being a guy who works in the professional gaming advisory industry. I came across something before the show. I think this was on one of the wrestling message boards, and they were quoting from some offshores. Offshores were actually taking action on who was going to get their head shaved. And as you would guess, it was immensely stacked as far as the big favorite being that Vince was going to get his head shaved. I always had visions of this, of Trump walking into Vince's office the day of the show and saying, Vince, change of plans here. I just bet $5 million on me at 500
well,
to one.
I mean,
there's I'm getting my head
there's
shaved.
There's handles on those kind of props where the books protect themselves. But, yeah, I that's what I always said, why I said, you know, you can't bet on wrestling because Vince could just, you know, have somebody walk in. So, yeah,
That's the one time. By the way.
There is betting on Rock and Cena, I believe, this year.
Yeah, I believe that there is. The other thing I'm going to mention here, too, you mentioned about 20 years after WrestleMania III, the sort of half-hearted way that they tried to capitalize on that was a match. Great Khali defeated Kane in 5:32. They tried to play off of Khali being like the modern giant, that was part of the storyline of that match.
I don't want to do this to you again, but that's shitty.
Yeah, no, okay. I understand.
Okay.
I understand. While I did not use the word, I do not differ with it. So,
yes. Okay.
those were like the high points of that card. Again,
I'd like to say that was a better that WrestleMania, although maybe that didn't do it justice, was better than 22.
Better than 22, yeah.
And it's a good WrestleMania.
24,
overall.
Which to me might very well be the best of the modern era here. So many memorable moments. Let's just go right to the one that it's the best known for. In 2023, Shawn Michaels defeated Ric Flair, retiring him, at least if you don't watch Impact, which, again, most wrestling fans don't. But it was a retirement match
for
Ric Flair.
Why don't you wrestle anymore, Ric Flair? Why aren't you in WWE?
I love that he gets asked that all the time. That is like the great. And moreover, that Ric Flair, who, as best as I can tell, is otherwise a loyal Impact Wrestling employee, will say that at the drop of a hat in an interview. What do you think Money Mark Dixie Carter is thinking every time that comes out of his pie hole?
TNA is an abortion.
It is. It's a horrible promotion. Ironically, he would go back on his word in the same town where he lost his career to the Shawn Michaels
Orlando.
In this match. Because this was held at the Citrus Bowl in Orlando.
Another dump in Florida.
But the temporary renovation for it, I think that was on the WrestleMania DVD. An amazing, amazing job for one day of not making it look like a crap hole.
Yeah, I'm going
to props to them.
I'm going to say something's going to surprise you.
Yeah.
I don't think this was one of the 25 best matches at WrestleMania. This doesn't mean.
Really?
I've seen some people shower this with a lot of love. Here's what the problem was with Michael's involvement in there.
Yeah.
They kind of raised the bar where it was, like you talked on the last one, where it was one of those matches where it was about the performance.
Yeah.
And Flair just couldn't go anymore at this point, man.
And how about Michaels almost cracking his sternum? He did that dive out of the ring. Didn't he do like go to a moonsault or something?
Yeah.
Almost cracked it on the guardrail?
He was trying real hard, and the end was very emotional. I'm sorry, I love you, and he super kicks him.
To me, it was like...
It was just very inevitable.
It was like the Hogan-Andre atmosphere, but with work rate. That's how I looked at it. You didn't think the crowd was that hot?
I thought they were. But I remember for what I... first of all, here's a couple things. They had the gimmick where if he lost, only it was... That seemed like a little excessive here because he'd been inducted into the Hall of Fame. You knew he was going to lose.
Right.
You know, I think it would have almost been better if they would have just said, it's his last match. And I just want to go out and...
But there was the thing that would have taken away the storyline of him desperately trying to avoid it, trying to stop Father Time.
And I just knew he was guy.
Well,
look,
we all knew it.
These are my two favorite guys, but I think this is like a 3.5-star match.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. All right.
It is not the 5 stars that Wade Keller gave. It's preposterous.
Okay.
Rating.
He gave it 5?
I thought he did.
Wow.
That's way
too high. I thought there would have had to have been a reach around for him to give it 5 stars.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
but no, that does not be in my top 25 WrestleMania matches.
This
was not even the best match on the show.
This was not an important match on the card, but I'm going to mention it anyways because it involves one of the key guys of the era. This was a stupid battle for brand supremacy match that meant nothing at 7:06. Batista representing SmackDown defeated Umaga representing Raw. Umaga, if the previous year, well down the card.
This was one of those things. This is one of those classic cases of okay, we got two big names that aren't doing anything. Let's just put them against each other.
Yeah, Umaga wasn't even at that point. At this point, what it was he was big enough to plausibly have a match with Batista, and that's all that mattered.
True.
The other ones here of any note whatsoever. Before we get to the title matches, I'll mention the big special attraction match of the card here. They've done, you know, a fair number of, you know, freak shows in recent years, and few bigger than this one. At 11:36 in a no disqualification match, Floyd Money Mayweather defeated the Big Show by knockout. He had the, you know, loaded glove or brass knucks, whatever. Sort of a boxing versus wrestling angle on this thing here, although Floyd Mayweather wasn't limited to that. The one great part about this that I will put over until the day I die, the thing of, you know, how they do a thing where, you know, in the middle of the match, or, well, in wrestling when they have the rounds and you're in their corner and they'll squirt water in your mouth. Floyd Mayweather had, like, this big-ass chalice that he was, like, drinking out of. Like, okay, he's got the pimp chalice. I'm going to put
Floyd
that over.
Floyd Mayweather was very good and very natural at wrestling. I mean, say what you love Floyd Mayweather. He understands. I mean, he's a heel in boxing. I mean, they just don't say that.
And they tried to start him as a face, and in Las Vegas, where he's never been a face.
Well,
I mean,
I had a major issue with the Big Show being involved in this because it's just another, and we've been talking about this seemingly for years, of here's a guy who's supposed to be your Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
Okay, they just brought him back, and you have him lose to him. Tiny boxer.
Right.
I know that Floyd Mayweather's a very – but it doesn't make him – number
right.
one – look, Mayweather's not going to do this and lose, but...
But it should have taken a tank running over the Big Show to put him down.
I just didn't like his involvement. I just thought it made him look bad. Like, to me, when if the office today is sitting there banging its head against the desk, saying, why don't people get more emotionally invested in the Big Show? They should probably look to this, because they haven't helped him.
I would agree. The one thing I want to play counterpoint on, because that's an interesting point, what I think they would say to you is that Andre had the luxury of being a special attraction in an era where that was possible, and that the Big Show today...
Yeah, it's tougher.
They got to book him more so like other guys. The two title matches here, this one, the first one here, the triple threat for the WWE Championship, this was buried in the middle of the card. John Cena coming back from an injury shockingly early at the Royal Rumble. He recovered from a torn pec or whatever.
Yeah, and he was the big surprise entry.
The only number 30 ever to win the Royal Rumble.
No, is that true?
Somebody has since, he was the first one. Yeah, I don't think anybody has since.
The Undertaker 30. Wasn't 30 when he
won
it?
No, he was not. I remember that at the time. He was the first one to ever win at number 30.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you something. I think that Royal Rumble's overrated. I'm going to tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
The sheets were so it was because no one knew about it.
Nobody knew.
And because they got over on the sheets were like, this was so shocking. I was here. We were playing a drinking game. Me and the little guy. The little guy was over, as a matter of fact. Me and all of us played a great drinking game during that Rumble. You ever played this? I recommend doing this for the Rumble. It's fun.
Okay.
How many ever people are over at your party? Everyone draws a number. Okay? So say it's you and five buddies watching it. Okay? You'll draw numbers 1 to 6. Whatever number you draw, that's the first guy... That guy is your guy in the Rumble. When he's eliminated, you do a drink, do a shot, whatever. The next guy, so your guy's out, you then inherit the next guy in the ring. I remember this was a night. We've done it multiple times. This was a nightmare Rumble to do this with because there were so many guys in the ring. It was so backlogged that, like, it was. I just remember that being a nightmare for my drinking game and thinking that Rumble was overrated.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe the praise that was heaped upon it.
Yeah.
I thought it was really boring until the end.
Yeah, and they crammed it into a storyline where. Because Cena chose to not wait for his vengeance.
I hated that.
He wrestled Randy Orton the next month at No Way Out.
Yeah, I hated
Randy
him.
Orton, like, punched the ref or whatever, so kept it by disqualification. So Cena and Triple H, and it was an odd kind of a thing.
I didn't like that.
Orton wins by, I think it was, didn't Triple H pedigree Cena, but Orton came along, kicked him in the head.
Yeah,
pinned Cena.
This was a classic. This feud interesting that the Raw title match clearly was booked as less important.
By the way, we forgot, there actually were two special attraction matches here. One of the only times in this that we're even going to talk about the women in here. At 5:56, the Playboy Bunny Mania Lumberjill match. Beth Phoenix and Melina with Santino Marella defeated Maria and Ashley. This was most notable for having Snoop Dogg as a part of it. They were playing up the whole Playboy thing here, Playboy Bunny, blah, 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 blah. So
notable that I completely forgot it existed.
Yeah. But, you know, well, they played it up big on the show. Title match that closed the show. They couldn't do it streak versus streak, but it was streak versus title because, again, Edge was not undefeated at WrestleMania.
He had actually never been beaten at WrestleMania.
Yeah,
he just had not won a Money in the Bank.
They didn't bother to play that up, but they could have. And you know what? It might have put more heel heat on him if he'd gone for that technicality. But at 23:50 in the match to close the show. Undertaker defeated Edge. I'll tell you what, I give them a world of credit because we're going to talk about this subsequently with Triple H and Orton, just as we did with Triple H and Jericho. It is so friggin' hard to follow something like Michaels Flair. And I don't remember too many people.
And Mayweather, too.
Yeah, and Mayweather. And I don't remember too many people bitching about this match at the end of the night,
no,
Kyle.
No, unlike the Triple H matches that we you just referenced, this is the best match of the show. This is a top 17 or 18 WrestleMania match of all time.
You put this even above Michaels and Flair. Okay, interesting.
Oh, I think significantly.
Okay.
I would put this at like 4.25.
Okay.
So it's almost a full star better than Michaels Flair.
Okay. All right, well, these were the notable
By
matches.
By the way, at WrestleMania, better than 23. This is a good WrestleMania overall.
This is probably my favorite of the modern era. Keeping in mind, and I didn't get to see 26, but
I like 26 better. We haven't gotten to that.
We're going to get to one here. What a dropped ball. When you got WrestleMania 25 coming up, and you may disagree with me, but I thought the marketing was stupid. Because, first of all, not only was it not the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania, it was WrestleMania 25. It struck me like, hey, morons, if you don't say that, then next year for WrestleMania 26, you could trot out the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania. You could use the 25 thing twice. I thought it was stupid.
I'm going to be very honest.
Yeah.
I, wasn't watching wrestling a lot going into this show.
Yeah.
I don't remember a lot. I remember hearing that. I don't know what I was doing. All I remember is I heard about that the build was really good for Michaels Undertaker. And so I kind of got in tune with that. But the rest of this show is very forgettable, except obviously it's real close to 5 stars. I'd give it 4.75, the Michaels Undertaker match. It's really all there is with the show. To me, this show is only slightly better than, say, a WrestleMania 13, where it's a total one-match show, but not one match based on build, necessarily one match based on how good it is in the ring.
Here's what they did a couple of different times in these couple of years here, and it's so stupid. Basically, waiting until Elimination Chamber to set up your Mania matches. They've learned the lesson the last 2 years. They got it teased out enough that you can see the contours of what's coming.
Even if you don't make it official, you got to give people an idea.
Yeah.
And Michaels Undertaker's great. I've got it number 5 all-time WrestleMania matches.
I can see that.
People probably have it higher.
Right.
There are some who believe this is a 5-star match, that it was the best match of the last 10 years. I wouldn't go quite that strong. It's on the short list.
Right.
But other than that, there isn't a darn thing that I care about on that WrestleMania besides that.
Yeah, this was...
The Triple H Orton thing really fizzled after a hot start, and it was another instance of a Triple H world title match, just like WrestleMania 18, where he couldn't follow a match that came across as bigger.
Right.
At the end.
Right.
That's a Triple H issue, I think.
And the thing is, when you look at this, that this was held at Reliance Stadium in Houston, which is the heir to the Houston professional football legacy from the Astrodome. This was not heir to the legacy of WrestleMania 17 because this show sucked. The title matches didn't have a whole lot going for them. The one did because it was a rivalry one. Triple H defeated Randy Orton. They reopened that whole storyline from years past. But it was a thing where Randy Orton, they were having him go psychotic. He was attacking members of the McMahon family. And then a little bit of somewhat kind of breaking kayfabe. It was a big shock when Triple H came out to rescue Stephanie because they hadn't acknowledged anything between them on camera ever.
Yeah,
you know, dating back to the breakup. Yeah. So it was a little shocking in that way.
It started out well, but it was one of those things, diminishing returns as you got. You actually got less interested in the match as the show got near. When Triple H came out is when the angle peaked.
Yeah.
And every week you cared less and less to the point when the match came and there was a much better match, no one really cared.
And this one, it couldn't close the show going after Undertaker Michaels. No. It simply couldn't. 23:35, so they took their time on it, too. Here's the thing, too, and I saw on Wikipedia Randy Orton pointing out that the stip didn't seem to make much sense. If Triple H had been disqualified or counted out, Randy Orton would have won the championship. This one, for the hatred of the build, called for like a street fight or something like that. But beyond that, if you remember, when Triple H was coming out backstage or before the match, who was giving him a pep talk? Vince McMahon. if you're Vince McMahon, chairman, you control the company, whatever, why would you permit a stip that would keep your son-in-law from going out there and getting full bloody revenge on your family's enemy?
Well, I think you're analyzing a little.
But in a kayfabe sense, yeah. Does that, all right, am I being Nelson nitpicker on that?
Yeah, a little.
All right.
I just think it was one of those things that it, by that point, apathy was running wild.
Yeah, it was. The previous title match was nothing to write home about. John Cena defeated Edge for the World Heavyweight Championship. It was a three-way match that the Big Show was in, also a triple threat match at 1445. Notable for the finish where John Cena gave the attitude adjustment to both. I guess he had both Cena and Big Show on his back, and it was a one-spot match. Very little heat between them. They tried to wedge some kind of storyline of Vicky being between Edge and the Big Show, some kind of love triangle there. One of the worst.
I don't remember that at
all. One of the worst world title match setups in history. It was absolutely, absolutely pathetic. The less said about that one, the better.
I just don't remember watching a lot of wrestling.
They weren't even caring.
This was like, I don't know what I was doing. I need someone with me at those. What was I doing in the spring of
09?
Of 09 that I just didn't. I was just not paying attention.
Well, this I can't blame you because this was some real crap. Three other things worth mentioning on this thing. None of these things in a whole lot of detail, but 13-16 Extreme Rules match. Matt Hardy defeated Jeff Hardy. They had pulled the trigger yet again on a Hardy versus Hardy.
This was
feud.
Kind of disappointing a little bit, wasn't it? Too?
It was. It was better than the first Hardy versus Hardy feud, but that's setting the bar low. Yeah.
That's right. I remember that. Matt had come back and turned on Jeff.
That he was like the secret
match.
Stalker. That he'd been stalking him all these months and causing him to have car accidents and beat up in a stairwell and whatnot.
They were kind of, that was okay, I guess.
Yeah. And then Jeff Hardy ended up getting his revenge subsequently. The token celebrity involvement in a match here. They had this coming on the heels of the movie The Wrestler. Mickey Rourke was in the corner of the legends, as was Ric Flair. Chris Jericho defeated Roddy Piper, Ricky Steamboat, and Jimmy Snuka.
This was kind of notable for Steamboat kind of getting a little run out of it. Remember, he got to wrestle Jericho the next month one-on-one.
And the thing was, too, that Ricky Steamboat, you know, in my mind's eye, you know, and he worked great in this match for what he was able to do and everything like that. Didn't seem to have lost much, but such a strikingly handsome man. But I'm looking at him in this match with the hairline, like, oh, my God, I feel like I'm watching Vern Gagne.
Yeah.
It really felt like that. Frankly, not to second-guess them, but I will, I would have just booked it as Jericho versus Steamboat. Steamboat's coming out of retirement to try to shut Jericho's match. You still could have put Flair and Mickey Rourke in his corner. I think it would have been better that way.
It was funny that they didn't want Mickey Rourke at first.
No, they
remember?
Didn't. They didn't.
Vince McMahon didn't think it was a big... And then the movie started getting critical acclaim, and they had to beg him.
And they teased it that he was actually going to be in the match. And I think he was going to, except the Oscars people were like, yo, Mick, if you want to be taken seriously as an actor and have a chance to win an Oscar here, you're not going to do that. Then he gets...
That's kind of shitty by the Oscars.
Well, and then he gets screwed anyways because Sean Penn... for the Harvey Milk movie, which was disgraceful in its own right, he ends up stealing the Oscar.
What did you think should have won, the act of valor? Okay.
I would have given it to Mickey Rourke. As a loyal pro wrestling fan, and for no other reasons.
I thought that movie was very good. I didn't think it was like a great.
I thought it was very good.
I was a solid 4-star film.
Let me ask you.
Not
this.
A movie of the year candidate.
Did,
though.
Did you giggle as I did? In that, you know how they were filming scenes.
That was too short.
Well, it was relatively, yeah. But you know how they were filming scenes at the ROH shows? Mm-hmm. Were you giggling a little bit as I was at the notion that the biggest anti-nostalgia promotion in the history of pro wrestling was the home for, you know, Randy the Ram Robinson? That was kind of funny irony, wasn't it?
I kind of liked that Necro Butcher. I thought he deserved a nod for best supporting actor.
I thought so. A promotion that actually, that build in a storyline, build Jerry Lynn, of all people, as being over the hill, is going to be the one that in this movie is getting behind 80s icon Randy the Ram Robinson. The only other thing I'm going to mention, I think it was the Kid Rock concert that aced this out. Didn't Kid Rock play this show, I thought? Somebody had a musical performance. And if it was Kid Rock, and I'm a big mark for him, but It should not have aced out. This was a dark match here, a DVD only. The Colognes, Carlito and Primo, defeated John Morrison and Miz. They did finally unify the tag team titles, but it was a dark match in WrestleMania, Kyle. Where are their priorities?
They would scoff at you. And I'm not, I mean, it's one of those things.
It's also where their titles don't draw.
Yes, it is. But what, I mean, what do you want me to do? I mean, I've been saying it for six podcasts now that I've been lamenting the death. Okay, I mean, you know, the British Bulldogs and Heart Foundation ain't walking through that door.
Well, as long as you agree with me, I can.
Well, that means you're right. Of course.
Yes, exactly.